Today on the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast, we're going to be covering episode 4 of season 2 of What If? What if Tony Stark crashed into the Grand Master? All that right after this. Welcome to the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast. My name is Matthew Carroll, and with me today is J. Scotty St. Clair. What is happening, J. Scotty?
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Yeah, man, it's good to have you. Good to have you here.
Yeah.
We got to speak last night about this third episode of What If, and we were talking about how we had both watched ahead a little bit. And,
right.
And these next three episodes are so good. Like, they're just 4, 5, and 6 are really, really good, and I really love this episode. And I've got to, for bragging rights purposes, bring up 2 weeks ago on our Avengers podcast, on our rewatch, Infinity Saga rewatch episode, I brought up on the podcast with Ashley, I was like, when I was watching the show, and, you know, with What If coming up, I was watching the movie, and, like, when he barely makes it back from blowing up, from nuking Thanos' army, the Chitauri army, I was like, man, what a great What If episode it would be if he, like, barely missed, and he, instead of barely making it, he barely missed, and then had to make his way back to Earth through space and encountered other, like, cosmic entities and such. And then they started this episode with that opening, and I was like, oh, man, I called it. Yes.
Yes, sir, you absolutely did. Like, yeah, that's incredible, and I don't know what to say, man. You just have a mind for this kind of thing, a mind for strategy. I've done escape rooms with you, the fantasy draft shows that you have such an astounding lead 3 years in a row. You just got a brain for these things, man.
That's very kind. That's very kind. I was not fishing for that. I just thought that was super cool. Like, we were talking about it before a little bit, and it's like, I pride myself on trying to see where a story is going.
Sure.
And that's just always satisfying when you can kind of see the arc coming. It's also very satisfying when they surprise you well, and it's better than you think. But it is satisfying to know that you kind of, like, can see the matrix or whatever.
Sure.
But one like that was, like, not intentional. Like, that was so random. I just happened to watch Avengers this week, and it popped into my brain. So I just was, like, privileged to get to podcast about it just in time.
Yeah. Pulling something like that from so far out of left field is pretty, pretty incredible. So I'm happy for you.
Thank you. It feels good. It feels good.
Yeah. I guess before we get into the episode real quick, though, I will say on the last episode, you and I kind of commiserated at the top about some of the sacrifices we as podcasters make. And, you know, not to make myself, you know, a martyr here or anything like that, but just to let the listeners know some of the sacrifices we do make. I am not as far ahead as you anymore. Like, I came home, I sent you the message about if we were going to be podcasting tonight, and I had to make the decision. Am I going to rewatch episode 4 or am I going to watch episode 6? And, like, as we were scheduling things out, I should have pushed it a little further on so that I could have squeezed that episode in. But it was one of the hardest things to do, to see that artwork for episode 6 and go, nope, I'm going to go rewatch episode 4. But episode 4 is an absolute blast. So that being said, it was a treat to revisit.
I don't want to raise your expectations because that's always a dangerous game, but I loved episode 6. I think it's my favorite. Ooh. And I think it's specifically, I think you will like it a lot. It's just imaginative and interesting and, like, going to a totally different place than they've done in the past. Yeah. I just really, really, really like episode 6.
Yeah, that's enticing.
Yeah. You're going to like it. You're going to like it. we'll talk about it in a couple episodes.
For sure.
But for now, let's talk about Tony Stark encountering the Grand Master.
Yeah.
One thing that I mentioned on our episode 3 coverage was that, like, I don't like when there's this sort of, like, disconnect between, like, you're giving me a Blade Runner story, but then it gets into that what if Marvel jokey adventure tone that doesn't feel right for a Blade Runner story. And then when you're telling me a Die Hard story, when it does the same thing, I'm like, okay, this one was a perfect fit for the what if tone. You know what I mean? Like, it did not bother me that it had that what if comic feeling, Taika Waititi-esque comedy adventure tone, because that is what this episode was. And it was so much fun.
Yeah. Yeah, and agreed. And kind of coming off the heels about what you said about having recently watched The Avengers and kind of making that call, I love the fact that it made so much sense within the fabric of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, we know Sakaar is kind of the dumping ground. So, like, having that sequence where Tony doesn't go all the way through, and it's very visually evocative of, like, the Guardians, that, like, Guardians Volume 2 specifically, when Rocket and Yondu are kind of, like, hopping around, you know, all willy-nilly. I love that. So, yeah, just having Tony be a complete fish out of water. It was like a Marvel story through and through, and it really felt like, you know, Iron Man 2 meets Thor Ragnarok. And as I rewatched this episode, I kept making those same comparisons, but I also found myself like kind of like being reminded for the first time, I was a little surprised how much Ragnarok kind of like pays homage to like Mad Max and that like Beyond the Thunderdome kind of feel, and like thinking about Chris Hemsworth going to appear in Mad Max Furiosa like down the road, like it just makes a lot of sense. Pardon the pun with down the road, that was not intended at all.
Well, that's really funny. I had Mad Max in my notes as well. My notes said that the race sequence, which we've never really had, just a except for the Formula One scene, which is more of a race sequence that gets cut in half again.
Sure,
please forgive the pun. But the like, this is just a race sequence, and it was so evocative of Mad Max, but also the pod racer scene. Sure. Like, just really well done racing animation, and just the choices of where to put the camera and the imaginative nature of all the different characters you're getting to see. Some of them felt straight out of Mad Max too, like the some of those we didn't get to see a lot of these kinds of characters in because they weren't racing in the Ragnarok, but a lot of the characters they show in those racer pods look so much like Mad Max characters. It was really fun. But then it also has Iron Man in the middle of it, quipping in his best like peak Iron Man status, just so good, and Gamora running around, and all with like a Taika Waititi vibe because the Grandmaster and the setting and Korg. It just, man, what a weird and cool what if. Like, this is absolutely what this show is for, I feel like. Really, really cool.
Yeah. So this episode also like holds the unique distinction of being the first one that's kind of a continuation from what we saw in season one. Like, we knew when season one was in production, we had this story about Gamora, who went on to be a member of the Guardians of the Multiverse. And that's exactly how the episode opens. And it's kind of the first time we've really had Uatu kind of like hang a lantern on what we've been talking about, where the initial episode asks one question, but throughout the course of the episode, we're really presented with another one. And that is like, what if Gamora killed Thanos? Or so we're led to believe.
What if she met Tony and he convinced her? Which, man, I loved so much when he said to her, "Do you know what it's like to have your whole world destroyed? To watch as a madman comes for your family and all this stuff?" Like, you saw it in her eyes, which, again, wonderful animation. You saw it in her eyes. The one thing I kind of wish, I wish they had hit back on that point later on when they're in the racing. He does hit on, he's still talking to her about changing sides, but it's all about her giving up on being her father's daughter, which, like, I know that's a big part of her and trying to, like, get out from under Thanos' boot. But, like, I kind of wish that he'd been able to say, like, I don't know, like, he had learned something about her world and then been able to, like, reiterate that, because that was the thing that I thought was going to get to her. But instead it just was like, hey, don't be your father. Don't listen to your father. Don't be this person. And I think it was all there. It's all there. Like, there's nothing wrong. But I guess, like, that was the stronger point to me. So I wish that had been the thing that made her switch sides, I guess. Because he did. The Mad Titan killed her whole family, and now he came after Tony's family. And I think it's a stronger tie between those two. But the father thing is obviously a big part of Tony's story, so I get why they leaned more heavily on that.
Yeah, it's really tough, and I kind of agree with you. Like, it's not flimsy by any means, but it doesn't hold the weight that I kind of wish it did. And, you know, giving a lot of praise to the animation, but I feel like they had to rely on the animation and like the music to sell some of those moments a little bit more. So like, I think about that moment where Tony's got like the button in his hand where he can disable Gamora right there. And he kind of has that moment where he goes, no, this is a chance for me to like show her that like I can turn the other cheek and be the bigger guy or bigger person. And like that whole moment is really sold, like you said, through the facial expressions, but I really noticed the music and like in that moment. And that sold it more so than what I believed about the characters having interacted, you know, at that point in time.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Well, and the other part I think about it is tough because I also think about like Valkyrie. Mm-hmm. And another part of the episodes, I'm nitpicking here, but one of the parts of the episode that didn't really work for me as much is when they announced her as, you know, the ruler of Sakaar. And yeah, that's paying homage to what she did for New Asgard and the Avengers, but it didn't really feel earned in this moment. It would feel like it was like, oh, you know, that'll be something. That feels kind of fan service-y. But had maybe we not spent that time with Valkyrie and were able to spend that time with Gamora, maybe that would have made everything a little bit more satisfying. But again, this is nitpicking. Like it was a really solid episode.
Or the reverse, if it was a story about Valkyrie instead of a story about a Gamora, you know, like...
Yeah, sure.
I agree. Valkyrie feels like a tacked-on part of the story. She's there because she's supposed to be on Sakaar, and they wanted to pay homage at the end and let her be the president or whatever.
Right.
But, like, they didn't give her the chance. She does, like, I guess, headcanon / defense of this.
Sure.
They do show how dumb the population is. They show the explosions and death, and then they have this pause moment where, like, you think the people are going to react with horror, and they go, yeah! Like, it's a big cheer. And, like, sort of reveals the sort of the base nature of the populace of Sakaar. And then, again, you've got Korg, who's one of the few characters we know who resides here, and he even says, like, oh, yes, the Grandmaster's a horrible man. I really shouldn't have voted for him.
Right.
So, like, the fact that she just pulled off that last maneuver in the race is why they're cheering for her. And it's kind of like, it's not actually, they hadn't actually elected her president or anything, but, like, they're just cheering because she, you know, did her thing. And then Tony's like, I dub you president. Because they might have voted for Tony because he's the one that actually brought down the Grandmaster.
Chanting Valkyrie in the crowd?
They were chanting Valkyrie.
Okay.
But just because I think just because she did that last maneuver that killed the Grandmaster. But it was Tony.
Didn't kill
that,
him,
like,
though. Melted him.
Melted him. He seems to melt. I'm melting, melting.
He's like, ooh, this feels good.
Dude, like, again, this is such a fun episode to exist in the world. The fact that we get an episode where. it is Jeff Goldblum, correct?
Oh yeah,
I figured it sounds exactly like him. I assumed, and the performance is amazing and perfect. But I didn't actually look it up. And I just didn't want to say like Jeff Goldblum, and then you'd be like, it's not exactly. It's this other guy pretending to be Jeff Goldblum. But no, when he's melting and saying, "I'm melting, melting," like what in the world? What world are we living in that we got an episode where he gets to play a character like? Referencing the Wicked Witch of the West as he like melts, like I don't know, that's so funny. Oh, he actually melts. It's so good. I just thought he's perfect for that role, and that's such a weird role. Him like going, ooh, viscous. It's just like it's just so weird and funny.
So I need a mop. Sponge me. I need to be absorbed by something.
I need to be absorbed by something.
Yeah. And then the Wizard of Oz reference, Tony made one earlier in the episode, didn't he? I can't place exactly where it was, but I think he might have called the Grandmaster like the Wizard of Oz or something like that. But Tony had tons of references.
Coat of many colors.
Yeah, the Technicolor coat. And the Grandmaster wanted to call him Tin Man. He was like, Mojo Man? No. Tin Man? No.
Oh.
Something else? Okay, Mojo Man it is.
That's funny because it kind of alludes to that the Grandmaster might be a fan of that movie. Like two references. Oh, that's really good.
I
it's so good. The funniest part of this whole episode, though, the part that like hit me hard both times. What's the executioner's name? Do we have her name? I know he says it in the episode a few times. The one with the melty
Topaz.
Stick.
Topaz. Rachel House Topaz. Yeah.
Topaz. when they're all jumping out of the mouth of the celestial. And like all falling, and everyone's freaking out because they're falling and didn't know they were going to be falling down this huge, fall. And it cuts to her, everyone's going, and it cuts to her, and she's going, yeah, it lingers on her face with complete calm. Most of the sound effects disappear. The music dies. And she just goes, for like 10 seconds. It kills me both times I watch this episode. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, that's a good call out. I actually, that moment stood out to me for a different reason. When they have that moment where Tony has that reaction where it looks like he's just going to be like free falling out into space. And then you see the drop. My thought was, I wish Disney would make a roller coaster based on this. I don't think they will. I don't think What If has that staying power, that popularity. But man, I wish that looks so much fun. I'm an adrenaline junkie for drops like that.
If they did that and combined it with like those kinds of roller coasters they do, where they have like animation and like I love that. Like a lot of times they're less thrill seeky like what you're talking about, but I love those. You like Universal Studios does a lot of like rides where you ride around and the different screens show while you're doing it. Kind of makes you feel like you're doing the thing even if you're not. Back to the Future,
kind of like Haunted Mansion or something like that.
Pirates of the Caribbean, yeah, those kinds of things, but a little more they're like those things for sure. These days, though, they have one for Spider-Man at Universal Studios a few years ago that I did. One that I remember most is Back to the Future. But that one is actually like Back to the Future was one that doesn't exist anymore. But I went to it as a kid and loved it, and went back as an adult and loved it. But it was just a stationary car that was moving with a screen in front of you. But since then, they have adapted that idea, and now you have like moving cars doing actual movements through the world, but screens in front of you and behind you, and like 3D. And a lot of times they'll put smells and sounds and cold and fire and stuff in there. It just makes you feel like you're in that world. I love it. I love that kind of stuff.
Really, really cool.
Yeah. Love. I'm a sucker for that. I went into when I was in Dallas a couple years ago, and there was a Simpsons themed, like they had a restaurant that every month or two they would change the theme of it, and they would do a different
pop-up.
It was like a pop-up shop, but it was the same restaurant. They would just do, and it was a burger joint next to a bar, and they were both owned by the same people, and so they would turn them in. So they turned it into Krusty Burger and Moe's Tavern, and like I haven't been to a theme park since a long, long time, 20 years maybe. And so, but going there and just like sitting in a place that looked like Moe's Tavern and like sitting in a room that looked like a Krusty Burger and ordering a Duff beer, or whatever, I just felt like I felt like a kid. I don't know. It's a weird emotion that comes along with that sort of immersive experience, you know?
Yeah, your skin starts to turn yellow. And that's the jaundice.
That's the jaundice, yep. Oh, man. Yeah. Stark in this episode was just, I said peak Tony Stark earlier, and I mean it. Like, just the names, the quippiness, the confidence, but also the way that he gets angry and goes after someone, and it seems sort of self-serving, but also altruistic. You know what I mean? Like, like when he tells Gamora, he's like, nope, I'm going to save this world too, just to prove you wrong and to piss you off. For no other reason but to prove you wrong and to piss you off.
Gotta love that.
I love it so much. And all the nicknames he called Korg Mount Rushmore. That was really nice. And then later someone calls him Goatee. I forget who. I think it was Val calls him Goatee. And he says, hey, names hurt.
Yeah. When you said the goatee, it reminded me of the moment when he and the Grandmaster first met, and the Grandmaster's all up in his face, like, I like this chin decoration you've got going on there.
So many good lines, so many good and funny stuff. But, like, the stuff that really resonates with me and the stuff that hits me the hardest, and it's what is most important about a Marvel property. And it's when the Marvel tone that What If is striving for works at its best is when you have those jokes, you have all that stuff, but you have those moments where everything turns on a dime and the characters just like really want to do the right thing. You know, they like have whatever injustice has piqued them to the point they're like, it's time to go to work, you know? And like, I love that. The campsite rule conversations, like,
yeah, that was great.
It was just a great way to, and I'm getting freaking emotional. About a What If episode, but like, it's just a great way to think about. And like, I'm sitting there watching it with my niece and everything, where, and she's like, the campsite rule, like, she's learning what that rule is, you know, like,
yeah.
And it's just an idea, like, And it's something I can tell her in this house when I'm teaching her about how to clean up, you know, oh, you need to leave the room better than you, better than you found it. Like, don't leave your stuff here. Like, it's just such a good rule for life.
Yeah. That's what these characters were originally created for. They were created, you know, to instill like lessons in mm-hmm. the youth and have like characters that were noble that they could look up to. So to have that coming full circle, you know, it touches my heart as well. But you, referencing the callback to like the campsite rule actually made me think about that whole exchange between Valkyrie and Tony. And yeah, while I would have liked to have a little bit more from Valkyrie, that was a great exchange. Like, we got the reference to the demon in the bottle storyline from the comics. Like, that was really great. And then when Tony finally does take a sip of that drink and immediately like passes out with his eyes open, he's just like foolproof.
Really good. And it reminded me of the Asgardian liquor that is in Age of Ultron.
Excelsior.
Like, it's very similar way he like passes out and says, "Oh, nope, shouldn't have taken that." It also reminded me, we were talking a couple weeks ago as we covered Iron Man. Captain America 1, that Cap can't drink because of his constitution, but I bet he could drink Asgardian liquor.
I bet he could.
I bet he could.
He's worthy.
He's I'm sure that Mjolnir has a little bit of a convex top that you could like.
I like that. I
kind of like how people you know, drink out of like the Stanley Cup or whatever.
Oh, okay. To
drink out of Mjolnir.
I was thinking of like the ice luge, but
yeah. that's good. I like that too. I really liked, why is it sticky when he put his suit back on? Oh, man. Really good. And just the moments of humanity, again, like when he, there's so much in this episode. Like, it's so packed. When it's funny, and then he sees the video of the after the Battle of New York stuff, and he goes, oh, we won. Like, because he doesn't know. It's such a great moment. Like, they didn't have to do that. They could have had him not think about his home world and what happened. Like, but no, that's where he was. That's where his mind was. And it's just really good. Mm-hmm. Oh, good. So good.
On that note, like, Tony, you know, ultimately his goal being to get back home. Do you want to talk about the final scene just a little bit? Because, like, I mean, we kind of knew Gamora's story wasn't over, but I really liked the way that whole sequence was played. Mm-hmm. I thought they subverted expectations really well, but I did find myself with like kind of a question upon both viewings. Like, when Gamora goes to, you know, press the staff to Thanos, he has this look that just like does not read as like concern or recognition at all to me. Like, he does not seem concerned about this at all.
I agree, but I just think that's Thanos. I mean, you think about his actual death, really both of the ones we've seen on screen.
Okay.
When he dies, when he finally gets snapped in Endgame, he just kind of sits down.
That's true.
He just, like I think he is a man on a mission, and when he is, like, finally beaten, I think there's a moment of, like, relief for him. I think there's a little bit of, like, well, I didn't do my mission, but I kind of get to rest now. Like, it seemed like a Thanos thing to do, to just be like, I'm surprised. And he just kind of looks at his daughter. Like, he just kind of slowly looks over at her. But
yeah,
to your point, it could also mean that he's not dying. I think I see the bit of his chin starting to melt though. But I'm not sure. Okay. I'm not totally sure.
I'd have to go back and kind of check on that. But I really like your read on the situation, kind of like him seeing this as his respite and kind of his acceptance that we saw in Endgame. But I think I would have liked maybe just like a daughter, some kind of like recognition of her. But the other thing I was thinking, maybe it didn't kill him, because we kind of saw with the Grand Master, like the Grand Master being a he's a celestial, right? We had that confirmed, right?
No, he's a
because the Celestials are like giants.
Yeah, right? The Celestials are the big robot-looking guys from the Eternals. Yeah. The Celestials are the guys we see their big armor as part of the racetrack in this episode, and we see them in Ragnarok.
Right. And nowhere is the head of a deceased Celestial.
Most of the stuff we know about the Grand Master comes from comics. It's not actually stuff that's MCU canon necessarily. But from what I understand, he has two brothers, and they're known as like Ancient Ones or something like that.
Maybe that's it, because I know his brother is supposed to be the Collector, at least in the comics.
Yes. And if I'm not mistaken, Bill Murray in Quantumania is another brother of theirs.
Oh, interesting. That I did not know. Okay. Okay.
And again, that's from comics, not at all in the MCU. And it's just stuff that I've been told from comics, because you know me, I know very little about the actual books.
yeah. That's fair. We don't need to get too far into the weeds on it. I'm sure there are some people that are, you know, screaming at us right now. But the reason I bring it all up is because what we saw, like, the, even though he melted, it didn't kill him. So I just kind of get a chuckle of like contemplating the fact that there may be a bowl of soupy Thanos out there as well that has to be like, you know, carried around by the Black Order. I could see like Ebony Maw, like, you know, kind of relishing that responsibility.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. And it's prior to the death of that little, his like the voice of Thanos or whatever, the guy who was like,
oh, that's Ebony Maw.
Oh, that's Ebony Maw.
Yeah.
I thought Ebony Maw was the other one. Okay. Never mind. Okay, cool. Your joke was the same joke I was trying to make.
Black Dwarf, maybe.
I think I was thinking of the guy who's like the wizard
in Ebony Maw.
Oh, the same. Well, that's not who I'm thinking of. He's the guy who gets killed.
Also like the magical one.
But the guy who gets killed in Guardians is the one I was thinking of. His little servant who's in Avengers going like,
gotcha. I forgot all about that guy. I know. Yeah.
To attack Earth. It's to court death. I could totally see that guy like walking around still talking about him, because at this juncture, he wouldn't be dead as far as I understand.
Sure.
He dies in Guardians.
Okay, I gotcha. Yeah, I forgot all about that guy.
But I don't remember. He has a name in the movie, but it's like something like, yeah, I can't remember. Yeah, okay. Just covered that like last week, and I cannot remember the.
It might be the mouth of Thanos, because he kind of reminds me of the mouth of Sauron from the Lord of the Rings. So they might have been
maybe a reference. It totally does look like Sauron adjacent.
Anything else in your notes?
Well, I got a few. They're just things I thought was funny. I really liked the Tony Former, the Transformer version of Tony.
Oh yeah.
Him becoming a car, more than meets the eye. I really liked it. just thought that was awesome.
That sequence had some great instrumentation that I really took note of. It had an electric guitar that kind of came through, and I think the music throughout What If has been serviceable in the fact that I haven't really noticed it, but this was one of the few times that like it really like stood out and kind of highlighted things for me.
Yeah. That really beautiful, exciting music. It got me pumped. Like, the whole thing, whole sequence was done really, really well, and I like with tons of imagination. Some of it borrowed imagination from like other properties and other things we've done here, but like, man, it just is. It's just fun. That's what If's all about, like combining these disparate things throughout the universe and putting them together. I really love it. I really liked this is in the background, this line, but I really liked it. He's like, all right, everyone, we need to find
Metal Mojo Man.
We need to find Metal Mojo Man. Put down your dinner, those of you who get to eat today. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I really liked when he says, I've got to get back to Pepper. He's like, I'm more of a salt man myself. Bad for you, sure, but there isn't love always dangerous.
Yeah.
And I really liked the narcissism of the Grandmaster, that everything's him, including the alarm sound. It's just him saying, alarm, alarm.
Alarm. Alarm.
Really good. Oh, man.
Yeah.
So, just a great episode.
Cork had a number of great funny moments, but the only one that kind of like stuck with me is when he had the little pet chinchilla, and he's like, I'm going to name it Nico, after my friend Jeffrey.
Yes, that one got me too. A lot of the Korg lines, I hate to say, felt a little stale to me, because I think like we've seen a lot of Korg.
I'm glad you said it. I felt bad about feeling like I'm getting kind of Korged out, and like I've been on record saying like I think Taika Waititi is kind of, you know, waning a little bit, but
I think his humor is wonderful, but it's a little samey. And it gets a little tired after a while. And it's to me, it doesn't fit the Marvel vibe as well as I want it to, where I get this feeling like it's too silly. We've talked about it before a little bit on the MCU cast, which this is. Mm-hmm. But sorry, I was like, okay, I'm so used to be on like Multiverse News with you going over on the MCU cast. We talked about this. But we've talked about it before how like there's a certain level of absurdity that is forgivable, but like there's a few things in the MCU that are borderline. One of them being one of, and the moment I always point to that is like it's borderline doesn't work is the Galaga moment from Avengers when like when he says, and I think it's a reshoot, which is what makes it like it doesn't fit the scene. He says that guy over that man over there is playing Galaga. Hope you wouldn't notice, but we did.
Right.
I think that was an improvised moment,
mm-hmm.
or like someone told him to say it or something like that. And then they later went in, and at the end of that scene, there's actually a man over there switching his screen over to Galaga.
Right.
And like that is the point where it seems like it's a little too ridiculous. Like it's funny if Tony is teasing that this feels like a command center where people would be playing Galaga. Like that's kind of the joke. And then it goes a little too far if someone's actually playing Galaga on the ship. Like it feels a little like Shield Agent is playing. I don't know. There's these certain absurdities that like feel on the edge of too far.
You might really be on the money with that. Like I haven't really thought about it or tried to pinpoint where Marvel kind of had this divergence with like the tone and the humor. And it doesn't really bother me. I've heard a lot of detractors kind of say like it's, you know, it's gotten to the point where every other line is a joke and we can't have any moments that have emotional weight because of the jokes. But that's never really been a problem for me. But I think you can kind of look at the 2012 Avengers, and while the success of that film was obviously had such an impact on the future of the MCU, I think about Thor, The Dark World, and some of the movies that immediately came after that, even like The Winter Soldier, like as serious as that one, it had like that sequence in the mall with the guy that's like calling Cap like a specimen and stuff like that. And then like in The Dark World, I always think about the line when Jane Foster's on the date with the guy and she's like Seabass. And then obviously Guardians kind of like did its own thing. And then I think all of the movies were trying to kind of like evoke that Guardians feel too. But
yes, absolutely. For me, the line is always, whether you can get back to an emotional moment and have that payoff, the line is always, would this character actually say this in this moment?
Right.
And it's like, if it's Tony Stark has that bravado and silliness that he would absolutely claim a guy is playing Galaga, but a guy actually playing Galaga feels like you should fire that guy. You know what I mean? Like, that's not... No, like that doesn't work. We had like that conversation a lot on the show about various topics where like, I don't know, the hero says one thing, but actually doing it is a step too far, or like they shouldn't actually there's certain actions that just feel like they're just too far to the either silly or too brutal or too irresponsible or whatever. There's just like sometimes there's this little line where it's like, okay, now you're just over the line. And it's a suspension of disbelief thing, and everybody has a different line, but I feel like Taika Waititi's movies are the most over the line. And I still enjoy them, but it kind of breaks the verse because you lose your suspension. You know what I mean? Like, I no longer care too much that Surtur is destroying Asgard because it's funny that Hulk is jumping at him. So it loses the... Like I lose my suspension of disbelief that allows me to really care about these characters, and it becomes a comedy more than it is an adventure, more than it is a story that you're supposed to be bought into. And I think that that's just Taika Waititi's style, and it really makes me interested in what the uncut version of Love and Thunder looks like, because I don't... Even Jojo Rabbit, which is like a really dark movie in some ways, still rides this tone of like silliness throughout it.
Yeah.
And so if he really went all in and made like, we have said it many times, and Ashley's very upset that they cut a lot of that stuff, you know, in Love and Thunder.
Right.
It seems that they cut a lot of the murder and the killing, but I'm wondering if like, what that even would look like with Taika Waititi doing it, because Taika doesn't ever have the, he does not have in general has not had the restraint to restrain his comedy bone to allow the serious moments to like linger. And so I'm wondering if some of those scenes were cut, not because they wanted it to be lighter, but because they were just too bizarre, you know, like if, and the couple that we got were pretty bizarre when he's like talking to that, the group of children when, Gore is talking to the group of children.
Well, that's one of my favorite moments from Gore in the whole movie. Yeah. Yeah.
Mine too.
It's dark.
Yeah. Mine too. It's dark. It's weirdly funny though. It's dark, but it's still him being silly with these children, and it makes it even darker. It has serious Willy Wonka vibes.
Ooh, good comparison.
Like,
yeah.
And I don't know now that I've never thought about it this way, but now that I'm thinking about why they cut those scenes, I've never thought about what if those scenes were just too bizarre. Like maybe they were just a little, like, not only were they dark and gory, but they were dark and gory, but also like on the line between suspension of disbelief in a way that makes you feel like gross. Like,
Okay.
I don't know. That's just speculation. I really have no idea. I don't know if we'll ever see those scenes, but I just don't know. I've never seen Taika have the restraint to keep his comedy out of the serious scenes long enough to really feel. I mean, there are some moments in Love and Thunder that I do feel, but
yeah. It's interesting how this conversation has kind of turned into like a discourse about Taika Waititi. But you know, I will say I hear your issues with Ragnarok. I don't really feel that as much in that one. I think like that just kind of came out at the perfect time where the character of Thor really benefited from that comedy and kind of like, you know, not taking himself so seriously. But yeah, after that, like, I think you're being kinder to Thor Love and Thunder than I would be. It was really disappointing for me. And like, Christian Bale is like one of the saving graces of that movie. And I would have loved to see more, but I hadn't really thought about that. Like, yeah, we've heard about how they're really, wasn't any kind of like oversight when they went into like shooting. Like he was basically given like an open budget and can just kind of do whatever he wanted to. So yeah, to think about maybe some of those possible scenes that were left on the cutting room floor is really interesting. And when you started describing that, like I thought of like a montage of Gore killing, but set to the tune of some kind of like pop song, like imagine me and you.
I'm a believer.
Okay, there you go.
Because of the God connection.
Perfect.
You
know? Perfect.
It's like real. The monkeys. I'm a believer.
Yeah, that's
like
great. That's
going
great.
Through like murdering whatever. I don't know. Yeah, it could definitely be dark and weird. And I would love to see it. I would absolutely love to see it.
Sure.
But I also understand if you go too weird and bizarre, you lose a portion of the audience, as we've seen with a number of things. And like. Yeah. As much as I'd love to see it, and I'd probably enjoy it on it for what it is, I don't know. There's a certain level of control that Marvel has to maintain over the brand and what they are and what the world feels like. It's always a judgment call as to what they should do. But I see why that could have gotten too weird for them. I mean, Willy Wonka's a weird movie.
It's really a shame though, because everything you're saying is exactly like what I want to see. I want Marvel to be brave again. I want Marvel to take those chances. I want them to like kind of break up the stagnation and realize that not every movie has to be for every person. Like you can have like these movies with smaller budgets that really embrace like a tone and style, and then like just let those be quietly successful, you know? Mm-hmm.
That's the key. I think that exactly what you just said is the key. They have to start making movies with smaller budgets. When every solo outing is costing them $300 million to make, not always going to make your money back. And you're going to start to, get this narrative that Marvel's failing. But if they had made the Marvels for $100 million and then it made what, you know, like whatever, like if they just keep the budgets not small, but reasonable for the movie, and then save those huge budgets for the Avengers movies, you know?
Exactly.
And I think that that's the direction they should go, and they should let, I agree. I want it to be bold again too. I think in the early Marvel stuff, they were bold. They did cool, interesting things, but then they found a tone that worked and stuck with it for like 7 years, and it worked.
Yeah.
Like that tone worked for 7 years.
Yeah.
It was great, but now it's time to experiment again, which I think they've been doing, but they've been experimenting with the kind of money that they did with Endgame and Infinity War. And it's like time to, they need to like scale. If they're gonna, it's like when you, I don't know the analogy here, but like you're gambling and you make a, you find your safe bet and you gamble on it. then the safe bet stops working. You got to start gambling again, but you got like you got to play the smaller bets and find what works. You got to find the exploit, as it were. Mm. And I don't think they've found that new tone that's working for them yet. Right. And it might even be the same tone, but they got to get some new life infused into it, some new interesting characters that work, and that only comes through like raw creativity and like connection with the audience. So anyway. We've gone way longer. Great episode of What If. Great episode of What If. Lots of fun chatting with you about all this stuff. Scoots. Tell the people where they can find you online.
Yeah, check out Animation Deliberation. It's the podcast that takes action, animation, and cartoons seriously, but not too seriously. So if you are a fan of animated movies, shows, cartoons, check us out over there.
Sweet. And also, if you like this dynamic here, as I mentioned yesterday, Multiverse News is the show that me and Jay Scotty and Haley Hobbs and Jay Sisson do here on the network. So check out that show when you get a chance. In Multiverse News, every you get podcast, we just talk about the news. Actually, very similar to what we were just doing. Like, talk about what Marvel should do in the background, not just on screen. So check that out if you like this sort of thing. We will be back very soon. Peace.
Until next time, true believers.
Hey, you just listened to the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast from Stranded Panda. I really hope you liked it. Let me just say a big thank you to all of our supporters on patreon.com/MCUcast. You are the lifeblood of our little operation here. And a huge, huge thank you to our insanely generous Illuminati tier patrons, Walter Kreisky III, Lieutenant Bongo, and Jazz Viz. You guys are amazing. If you'd like to see our beautiful faces, you can catch a video version of many of our episodes at youtube.com/strandedpanda. Love you 3000, my friends.